Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we have a two-part special. Wolfie Zhao from the Miner Mag will be joining us for a few minutes to talk about Bitmain. According to Chinese media, there's been some issues with cash flows at Bitmain, so he'll be joining us to discuss the information and rumors that are going around concerning the largest ASIC manufacturer, Bitmain. Then we'll move over to Anthony Power, a mining analyst who has been joining us for quite some time now. We haven't had him on since July. He'll be joining us to talk about August and September numbers from public miners and other recent news for these public miners. We go through Riot Platforms, Iris Energy, and many other public miners and their numbers for the last few weeks. Let's dive in. Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com. Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch.
Hey, Mining Pod, I'm Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council. The Texas Blockchain Summit is now the North American Blockchain Summit. The same emphasis on policy, energy, and Bitcoin mining, but now expanded by working with our partners across the country. We've got great sponsors lined up like Riot, Marathon, GDA, CleanSpark, Bitdeer, Lancium, Cormint, Compass, HTS, Crypto Power, Priority Power, Sonoda, and many more. Solidify your next deal or JV, or just come for the networking on November 15th through 17th in Fort Worth, Texas, for the third annual North American Blockchain Summit. We'll see you there.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Okay, welcome back to the Mining Pod. Wolfie Zhao from the Miner Mag is joining us today. Wolfie, longtime colleague of mine and also one of the most well-known Bitcoin mining reporters out there. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Will.
Yeah, good to see you again. So we brought you on to talk about Bitmain. You are the Bitmain whisperer of past. You covered a lot of what happened back in 2017, 2018 with the split between the two co-founders. That's all ancient history at this point to most people. But this morning, or I guess it was yesterday at this point, we got some information that Bitmain is having some cash flow issues, possibly. Colin Wu from Wu Blockchain first reported on this. And we're still sort of figuring out what's going on here. I'm going to hand it over to you to just lay out what's going on. And I would love to just kind of dissect it a little bit, knowing that I think a lot of times we get this information from Bitmain. It always seems like second or third hand. And it's hard to parse out. But I'll hand it over to you for the first bit, like what's actually happening here.
Yeah, so the words first got out on MyMy. So MyMy is a kind of Chinese career and social networking app. So a lot of employees would post stuff about their employers, about their career. And it's where basically like a Chinese version of LinkedIn. So I don't remember if you recall, like there was a change of payment structure at Bitmain like earlier this year. So there was a post about them changing the payment structure in that, you know, in the past, it was like a fixed salary for employees, right? So every month you get a paycheck. Somehow at that point, they changed the structure where you have like a base salary and a performance-based kind of bonus every month. So you will have a base salary and the other parts of this, what your paycheck will be based on how much you have fulfilled your KPIs. That's what I understand that. And so over the year, there have been a lot of posts about, you know, Bitmain still hasn't paid the 2022 year bonus. At this point, like it's already September. So I started noticing something like people posting June, July, still haven't paid the 2022 bonus. And it's probably like just quietly get, you know, cut out. But those posts never really generated much discussion until like there was one post a couple of days ago over the weekend. One employee. I don't know if like the identity of that person posting this stuff, but the post was like, you know, the performance based salary is like totally cut and the base salary was halved. They weren't sure like where is the remaining money that they were supposed to make. So that post got snowballed, like it got traction to, you know, got attraction from, you know, social media influencers in China, like Colin Wu obviously posted that as well as some others. So the Chinese crypto media picked it up, and then there was another notice that was leaked and said it was just like a basically internal email that confirms that, you know, the September paycheck was like kind of half suspended until like further notice because some of the KPIs were just not fulfilled. And then the words got into like this, going to Twitter and other English writing like crypto media. And so I guess like if I were just to speculate, like the HRs at Bitmain kind of went into a panic mode or something. And then a couple of hours later, there was another report that they kind of made the payments whole, the kind of to stop the rumors from getting even snowballed. And the original post of that started all this actually got deleted. So that's what happened.
Okay, I got a few follow-ups and understanding that we don't know all the information here. For KPIs, do you know any information about what those sort of benchmarks they were looking for were not met?
So I think the notice said it was something about the miners, the deployment process to mining farms. But like I don't know what exactly the KPIs was. I think from some of the leaks back in earlier this year about their payment structure change, there were several tiers of, you know, the career structure at Bitmain. Like if you are a certain level, you will have to fulfill like 70% or 80% of your KPIs in order to make that performance based salary. So yeah, I think it's probably, it was kind of vague what exactly that was, but it was something about like a minor deployment process through the platforms.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, just from back knowledge, they have the manufacturing arm. They have many arms, but they have a manufacturing arm and then they have a self-mining arm. So it seems like maybe it was because of the self-mining arm is what you're speaking about and not because of the manufacturing or the inability to sell units.
Yeah, it would appear like that.
Okay. The other question I saw brought up was the difference between this being like a performance bonus not being paid and then a salaries not being paid. And, you know, if the salaries aren't being paid, that's like a much larger red flag that you're not able to fulfill your monthly obligation to your employees. But it's a performance bonus is a little bit different, right? Where that happens all the time. It's pretty typical where like the business isn't doing well, you don't pay out your performance bonus, or if your employees are not meeting KPIs. Were you able to understand the difference between those two when looking at this, or was it clear that there was like a difference between this? Was it mostly just the performance bonus?
Yeah. So like I said, they changed the structure like earlier this year. So like what you were once making as a fixed salary were kind of turning into a combination of base salary and performance. So whether you can make the full of that performance depends on how much percentage you have fulfilled of your KPIs. So each department may have their own kind of KPIs. There was some talk back then that they basically will score your performance based on how much you have fulfilled. But I remember there was one metric as part of the scoring system where they will evaluate your age. If you are like above a certain threshold, that one age older, you will get like 1 point less. That kind of became like contentious at that time because it kind of kind of blatant like age discrimination.
Yeah.
Because you would, well, supposedly you would like value more experienced engineers because it's hardware design, like IC designs. So I don't know if they eventually enforce that, but so basically after that payment structure change, they kind of break this down into two parts. So I think what the initial post has said over the weekend was like the performance part was like totally cut, and the base salary was only paid half.
Okay.
So I don't think I have ever seen any cut down of their performance over the past like 6 months. I saw a lot of talks about they haven't paid the 2022 like yearly bonus.
Yeah.
But not the monthly like paychecks.
Okay.
So it's like two different things.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the clarification on that. One really quick question. Do you have a general gauge for a headcount at Bitmain these days or any information on that? I always feel like I just have estimates, but it's really hard to know.
Yeah. I don't know. Like maybe like 1,000, yeah. If I were to guess. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to go over just like some general thoughts on this, and maybe these questions are a little speculative, so apologies for that. But I want to think about like Bitmain's last year and business model. So a few things that we know about them. One, foundry costs. They have to get these allocations to the foundries, TSMC. Those are very expensive. And you have to do that ahead of time, right? Like you'd say, like, we're going to take up this much foundry space. So that's a huge cash cost. Yeah. And then also maybe not selling as many units. We know the S21, new price point out. All units are kind of down. $14 per terahash is kind of the range we're seeing. So it's not like a gangbuster year for selling ASICs, and it hasn't been for a little bit. So probably negative pressure there. And then some other things that have been just sort of out there is like they did a deal with Core Scientific. I believe it was a lot of equity, but there's probably some cash in there too and purchases of ASICs. Not going to run through that, but that's public information. People want to look into it. And then the considerations of like continue to pay for your foundries and for your units to continue being put out the door into the field. It seems like there's a lot of costs. Any thoughts on like why Bitmain is hitting this cash crunch right now? Like, are they overspending? Again, this is a speculative question, but I'm curious if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think generally like I have compiled some of the like net spending of public miners on like their property, plant, and equipment. Like, you know, I remember the data at Q1, Q2, like 2022 was like over $1 billion. Like maybe like a dozen public mining companies spend that much money in total. But that kind of started to decline sharply as from like Q3 like last year. So like probably like a year ago. So it's kind of declined to like maybe $200 million. It's like has been like that for like over the past four quarters. So, you know, 2022 was probably fine because, you know, they got so many pre-orders from 2021. So when the stuff gets shipped, they will still receive like monthly installments and money keeps rolling in. But then, you know, if the spending's kind of decline at that scale starting from like a year ago, then the money that they will keep rolling in this year will be much even less, right? And it's like a bear market. People aren't really expanding as crazy as they were in 2021. So obviously they have a lot of, you know, the money aren't just, it's just not rolling in that much. And like you said, they have to roll out the next generation of chips, and there will be a lot of like sunk cost to invest in the foundry and in the designing R&D. So yeah, I mean, it's like the painful kind of period of time where, you know, the people weren't buying and they were trying to market the next generation of equipment, but then people are still gonna wait until actually a couple months to actually receive that.
Yeah.
So they will depend on their like initial buyers to pay it upfront so that you can pay the wafers. But yeah, I mean, it's probably like manufacturers are all facing this problem. Whether or not there's a liquidity crunch, it depends on like how well they manage their treasuries, right? But I mean, I have seen a lot of S90 XPs being shipped to the Bitmain US entity like over the past past half, like the first half of the year, even until like September, every month there were so many XPs shipping to Bitmain's Georgia entity. So yeah, I mean, there were probably a lot of stock, yeah. Spot orders, spot stocks, and Bitmain, if I were to guess, that Bitmain also want to like utilize those, you know, spot orders. Like if they're not selling, if no one's buying enough of them, why not just
find them?
Yeah.
No, that's what I've somewhat heard of as well. Pivoting to different question, same topic in general though. What about some of these competitors, from your opinion? What does this mean for Bitmain? We have Auradine, we have Chain Reaction. Those are kind of like the further out ones, Block as well. And then we have now MicroBT and Canaan with their newest generation machines. It seems like the newest price point for the S21 might have been kind of shot across the bow for those two larger competitors. Any thoughts on that coming at the time when we have like this headline about them might not being able to pay certain people's bills?
I don't know. I mean, it's a tough time. Like, I think it's a really tough sell right now. Like, you know, you have to think about like if the miners want to expand, right, they need capital, and selling Bitcoin at this point is not really, it can cover the OPEX, but do they really still have money to like invest in the future if they really are just like self-reliant? It's kind of hard. So they will turn to equity, turn to debt. But it's also like what we have seen, like what happened after 2021, like a lot of leverage. And so I think it's difficult for buyers to spend the money. So, I mean, even it will be even harder for these manufacturers to keep up the sales and also the R&D. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. Like I remember 2019, like there was a period of time where like MicroBT had like serious like liquidity issues. But they, instead of like getting extra investment, they kind of sold a lot of the pre-orders, and there was like a couple of big buyers to like support them. Yeah. So I think it's kind of like, yeah, we need some of the like public miners to like have a strong commitment.
Yeah.
Basically. Cause like they are better positioned than private and smaller miners to get external fundings.
Yeah.
And that will, you know, start the money to flow into the manufacturers and then keep them, you know, life sustained.
Gotcha.
Until like we see the bull year.
Yeah. Which hopefully is soon.
We'll yeah, see. Yeah. I mean, if you look at like a 2019, it was like the foundry, right? Foundry started in, I think, in the summer 2019. Oh, wait, it's 2020. I don't remember. But like, I remember it's probably 2020. They bought a lot of like MicroBT stuff.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, it's like, you know, we need some like a public miners to like really.
We need Barry Silbert to come in and save us again with some foundry purchases. That's funny. Yeah, we can probably wrap up there. I mean, to your point, Iris Energy did just purchase, make a pre-order for these S21s. So it wasn't as big as we saw in 2021 with these pre-orders, but certainly big enough, and maybe there's more on the future. But
yeah.
Wolfie, thanks for your time today. Appreciate talking with you again. See you on the podcast, I'm sure, again soon.
No problem. Thanks.
Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering, and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch. Anthony Power is joining us once again. It's been a few weeks since we've recorded with him. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Will. Great to be.
I think this might be the fastest that we've had you on the podcast after getting information from monthly miners. Again, we get every month new statements from miners, how much Bitcoin they mined, other ancillary revenues they've accumulated, their costs, all that sort of good information. And you've done a fantastic job for the last 2 years compiling it. So we're going to go through it now.
Well, just before we touch on September, we can just quickly reflect on August. And what we saw from August that we hadn't seen in 20 level before that was the energy strategies that were being applied by some of these Bitcoin miners based in Texas. And when Riot published their results, which on first review, looking at the Bitcoin production, were extremely low for a company that has like 10.5 exahash energized, and they'd only produced, you know, a little over 300 Bitcoin. You started to worry about what was going to be next in the actual update, because they have had their problems over the past year with the storm and the two facilities being closed down due to damage caused by the storm. But when you then get to the part where it says we sold energy back to the grid and received $31 million of energy credits, I had to sort of like double take to make sure I was reading it accurately, and it wasn't 3 million. That was a significant amount. And we'd seen them get sort of 8 million, 10 million previous months, but 31 million achieved in August. It made you, and you know, patience was dwaning, waiting for the September update. And the September update came along, and that 30 million now reduced to sort of like 13.5 million of credits. So still a significant amount, but production was, you know, about 360 Bitcoin, which for them is quite low. So if we take the 13.5 million of credits and convert that into Bitcoin, and then allow for the fact that they have a hosting service as well as a self-mining service, that equivalent Bitcoin comes out at 571. And if we add that to the total, then that puts some, you know, a reasonable production for the month of September. However, you know, it does concern me that they're a company that can have the machines on 24/7 because they have a fixed energy agreement price down there. So if they'd have kept their machines on, would they have mined effectively more Bitcoin for the period they curtailed? And that's the sort of question, you know, that I'd be putting out to Riot to sort of respond to. Because, you know, whereas last month they were miles ahead of everybody else in terms of production using equivalency Bitcoin in the calculation, but this month, even including the equivalency, there are a number of miners that actually perform better, which then makes you think, was it worth curtailment this month? What are the benefits of that curtailment? Are there any other issues that we're not aware of? So from their point of view, you know whether they respond to that, I don't know, but we'll see, we'll find out from the next quarterly reports a lot more detail about it. In terms of company production for the month, one miner stood out amongst them all, and that was Iris Energy. So Iris Energy had another good month. You know, they've got nearly 5.6 exahash up and running now, so they've had that up and running for a few months, but they had a good production. They also benefit from being in Texas from the energy curtailment, and they actually had nearly $1 million of power credits going back their way. So again, when you put that into equivalent Bitcoin, that works out 36 Bitcoin added onto their total, effectively meant they achieved what I've started to term now as like the triple crown of Bitcoin mining metrics. So they achieved the best mining by exahash production, they achieved the most revenue per petahash of all the miners for energized petahash, and they had the highest utilization as well. When you take into account the Bitcoin equivalency, they were still very high. I think they were in third place if you don't include the Bitcoin equivalency. So by including that, because it is a benefit, you know, if you're switching off and you're using that strategy to raise raise other ways of well, in their case, reducing costs or increasing revenues, I think that should be, you know, part and parcel. It's their self, that they are a self miner. They're not doing HPC or I. It's self mining for them. So I've included that within the metric there, as I have done the last few months now. Bitfarms had a steady month, and they were second in all three metrics, and Hive Digital were sort of third in those three metrics. Marathon had a massive production during the month. They mined 1,242 Bitcoin, and they have a HODL now of close to 14,000 Bitcoin. So it's 13,726. So that 14,000 looks like it will be exceeded during the month of October, and it might already be exceeded already. We're already getting on for a third of the way through the month, and they're producing 1,200 Bitcoin a month. So they may have achieved 1,400 Bitcoin, which is a massive amount. I mean, based at the end of September, the value of that HODL was $370 million. And as you're going into the next halving in April next year, one of the most important parts of going into that halving is having some sort of cash runway to get you through the other side. Because, you know, we spoke about this before on the channel. You know, I can't say what the Bitcoin price is going to be tomorrow, never mind what it's going to be in April next year. And, you know, companies need to have a cash runway if the Bitcoin price doesn't change. It's operating at just over 27,000 today. It's been there now for a few days. It's been in that sort of range for the last month, actually. So it looks like, you know, we're seeing fairly steady state. If we don't see a rise in Bitcoin price, it's going to be a problem for some miners going through the halving. So having that cash runway to pay the bills, pay electricity, pay your staffing costs, pay, you know, the important costs that, you know, that you need to pay. And miners will be looking at those costs as well, saying, can we shave off some of those costs? Maybe we don't go to as many conferences as we go to normally. But they'll be, you know, me as an accountant, I'll be looking at cutting costs, you know, all over the place to, you know, if we see the Bitcoin price stable now. If the Bitcoin price goes to 60,000 before the halving, all these conversations we're having now are just null and void. It's just, you know, they're back to where they should be. But we've seen from previous cycles that rarely happens. It's usually 4 or 5 months after the halving period itself that we start to see the Bitcoin price start to appreciate to levels we expect it to get to.
Thanks for that information. So for September, we have a few miners that have put out all their information. You've compiled most of it. I want to go through that in a little bit more detail. We'll throw up some charts along the way. Let's go through some metrics I sort of stood out to you. Of course, you mentioned Iris Energy, Riot Blockchain, or Riot Platform now. But what are some other notable metrics from an accounting perspective that stood out to you for September?
So I've created a revenue by petahash. So I look at, you know, this takes away the fact that miners have to curtail. You know, it's about what they can achieve with every miner that's switched on. So, you know, the fact that a miner might say, I had operating 3 exahash, but I've actually got 3.5 plugged in. I use the 3.5 plugged in to see what the average is for each machine. So looking at the revenue raised for each petahash, Iris Energy came out top in that particular metric, as I already alluded to before. And they achieved $2,051 per petahash, followed by Bitfarms with $1,895, followed by Hive at $1,856. And if you look at the end of the scale, we have Argo Blockchain at $1,334. So we can see from that there, even if you sort of like use the Bitfarm number of close to $1,900, there's nearly sort of $550 between what Bitfarms achieved and what Argo achieved. And that's ignoring the sort of the energy bit, which applied this month to Iris, Riot and Cypher, who included it in their updates. There are other miners. So Argo do benefit from the energy, but they don't show in the update. So I would imagine if Argo were to include their benefit, they would move further to the left in the table than they are at the moment. Bitdeer, who are a relatively new public listed miner, they are based 500 meters away from the Windstone facility in Texas, and they also benefited significantly in August without actually alluding to the figure, but they were very satisfied with what they'd achieved in August. I'm assuming they had a good month in September using the energy strategy, and they achieved $1,805 without including the energy strategy in there. So I think again they will probably move closer to maybe even overtake where Iris Energy are. So, you know, some miners are choosing to include the data, some miners aren't. But once we get to the quarterly reports for these miners, we'll be able to see exactly what they are. And it'd be interesting then to put some comparison tables to show that miners are now thinking a little bit more outside the box as we approach the halving. And this energy strategy might be some saving grace for a number of these miners.
I want to go over and look at the share price drop since July, which is an interesting metric you've included here. And we're seeing the halving, if you will, of share prices. That's what Miner Mag sort of put this together in a newsletter recently. And it's an interesting look. I think this mostly speaks to the rebound that we saw earlier in the year. January onwards, there was a surge in the price of a lot of these shares because Bitcoin's price rebounded a lot, right? We got even up to, I think, $31,000 per Bitcoin earlier this year. But since then, we've also seen Bitcoin sort of stagnate, go back down towards 25K. We've seen interest rates continue to rise, and we're seeing this new narrative of higher for longer from the Fed, which certainly would cut out the legs from any sort of equity out there, mining or Bitcoin related, notwithstanding. On the other hand, there are a few other share prices that have grown quite a bit. So I'm looking at Core Scientific is up 800% this year. I think they're up a lot because they went from, you know, possibly going to Chapter 11 and dissolving the company to rebounding and possibly looking like they're going to emerge from Chapter 11 quite soon here. Cipher Mining is up 340% year to date. Bit Digital up 270%, Sato up 182%, Iris Energy up 177%, and there's a few others in there. What do you think is causing this divergence between some miners going up a lot and some miners going down a lot year to date?
Well, we can take Core Scientific away from this because I mean their stock price had lost 99% of its value back in the end of 2022. So they fell so much that any slight increase was going to be, you know, a good jump. And even where they are now, having increased by, you know, 800%, they're several, you know, X's away from getting back to where their share price was at the highs in 2022. So, but regards to other miners, so we saw the miners, you know, massively increase up until about July the 13th, and at that point in time, you know, the Bitcoin price was heading towards its highest for the year, and it increased by 72%. Some of the mining stocks, the average mining price went up by 300 to 400%. Across the board, I mean, really, even the worst performing miners were sort of like doing over 200%. Cipher was probably 500-600%. Bit Digital again over 500%. But when the 13th of July occurred and the Bitcoin price started to come back, and then all of a sudden we saw this like constant then deluge of the mining stocks reducing, we've seen them come back considerably since then. So in the last 12 weeks, we've seen the Wolf share price drop over 70%. We've seen Argo drop by 60%. We've seen Iris Energy and Mara by just under 6%. These are established miners there. I can't see the sort of like, you know, the pattern, the correlation pattern as to why. Bitcoin's only dropped 12% in the last 12 weeks. But what it does support is it does support the argument that, you know, the Bitcoin miners are, you know, as much as they are a proxy for Bitcoin, they're a very, very much more a volatile proxy for Bitcoin. So in times when Bitcoin price goes up, we see the miners really take off. So on a good day, Bitcoin can increase 2 or 3% on a good day. On a really good day, 5%. You know, if Elon Musk sends out a positive tweet on Bitcoin, it might go even higher than 5%. You know, if the Tesla decide to let, you know, cars be bought with Bitcoin, that might make a move on that day. But with the Bitcoin mining stocks, we've seen 50% increases in one day. So the volatility is really there, and all it takes is, you know, the economic news we've had in the recent weeks, what's happening around the world this week, never mind over the last 12 months. And all this has impacted on not just on Bitcoin mining stocks and the Bitcoin price, but across all the financial index as well. I mean, we were seeing Bitcoin price correlate quite well with the Nasdaq and the S&P 500, and you know, when we've seen those markets drop, we've seen the Bitcoin price follow as well. But the mining stocks are a far bigger volatile, investment to consider. And actually, that for some investors, that's really interesting. You know, it's easy to buy stocks. You can buy and sell stocks in a push of a button on your phone. And I think a lot of these investors are looking for when that day when they can get the 50% increase in the day, and that probably attracts them to it. The issue that many of these investors have, though, and even many of the good investors, the good analysts, it's all about timing. And usually by the time you think you've got in at the right place, so you've got out, you know, a stock can go up 50%, it can drop 30% the following day. And so, you know, and then people think, actually, it might go up the following day because it's dropped so much one day, it might drop, and it drops another 10%. And you think, well, it's going to recover that foot, you know, and then you get into this cycle then. So you very rarely see me recommending people to buy. I don't recommend people to buy shares anyway. I mean, I put the analysis out there just as a prerequisite for people doing their own due diligence. So if you see my information, it might give you a little bit of a start as to where you should be looking. So if you see something that's positive about a company, you might want to go and just check and do some more research before you even make an investment decision. You know, I can't see the correlation with in regards to any news regarding the miners, public updates, mining updates. You know, if I was to look at miners that are, you know, I consider to be doing well each month, and the likes of, you know, Iris Energy, CleanSpark, Hive, and I tell you that they dropped an average of 50% in the last 12 weeks, and there are other miners that have dropped less than that, that I don't consider to be operating in the same vein, then, you know, that's food for thought. So it's really interesting. It's about cycles. It's about timing's really important. For these stocks, it's not like, you know, I buy now and I'll sell in 3 months. It's about getting that timing right. And people are still learning. We're still in a very new technology. I've only been in this space probably just over 3 years, and I was on a call today with a couple of people who've been in the space a lot longer than me, and I felt like they're ringing me to ask me some questions. I'm thinking, you've got the experience yourselves there, you know. I do spend a lot of time covering this data during the week, so I feel like I do my own due diligence, but I sometimes can't answer all the questions. And, you know, it's a bit like saying, you know, Anthony, what's the Bitcoin price going to be tomorrow? I can't say what it's going to be at 6 o'clock tonight, never mind tomorrow. And I certainly can't say what's going to be next April after the halving. All we can expect is, you know, that the cyclical nature of Bitcoin, there are cycles, we're in a bear market at the moment, and post the halving we'll hopefully go back into the bull cycle, and that's when, you know, so it's all about, as the miners are preparing for the bull cycle, maybe investors also should be thinking about how we can prepare better for the bull cycle as well, and make sure we have our investments in the right space, but do our due diligence, because, you know, as I say, it's very volatile. And you know, we even the end of last week, we saw some green shoots. We saw some of the shares started to go up, and then yesterday that was wiped out again. So, you know, I can't tell you exactly where we are at the moment, but we're still sort of 6-7 months away from the halving, and we still got maybe go through some more pain before we get into a place where we're more happy with.
Definitely. I think that's coming from the right person as well. Someone who's been, you know, watching as an analyst in the space for so long. I want to go over to Iris Energy really quickly and then finish off asking a little bit about debt. Iris Energy turned heads with their latest announcement that they've not only increased their hash rate, but also that they've went ahead and purchased, I believe, like 1.7 exahash of Antminer S21 units. Those S21 units were just announced at the recent Bitmain conference in Hong Kong. So this is the next generation of units. Some people are saying that these units are actually underpriced. They're priced around like $14 per terahash or something around that. Need to spot check myself on that later. We'll correct in the show notes if so. That being said, it's interesting that they've gone ahead and purchased some of these ahead of time, which is very much like 2021 or 2020, where there was large announcements of orders ahead of time, and those large orders didn't always make sense, right? And Iris Energy even has a history of this as well. Another little footnote here, of course, is that Iris Energy went ahead and purchased some NVIDIA chips as well for about $10 million, which is pretty expensive. Any thoughts on that from an analyst perspective about going ahead and purchasing like these two expensive pre-orders for machinery?
I was surprised when the announcement from Bitmain on the latest S20 model came out and the actual specs around that model, because we've been talking in sort of this industry about how much further can we get more efficient than the S19 XP. There didn't appear to be a significant jump. We seem to be getting to the end of the sort of like, you know, is it Moore's Law, which stipulates about technology increasing over time and how far, you know, you can continue to increase at significant levels. And it looks like we've just gone to another level. Now, I've seen the update from Iris Energy, and $14 is quoting the update as what it's cost them. Now, if we're looking at what miners are paying for now for S19J Pros, I'm thinking it's not much different from that. It's probably about $13 a terahash, maybe 12. Maybe the big miners may be able to get $12, and the S19 XPs is probably closer to $20 a terahash, maybe 21. I think CleanSpark paid 21 recently, but they had a lot of credits, so it could be even higher than 21. So if Iris Energy have been able to buy, I think it's 1.4 exahash. If they've been able to buy that amount of miners and pay $14 effectively per terahash, that sounds like they've got a good deal. I mean, I don't know how much testing's been done. So, you know, we remember when the S19 XPs came out, there were some batches that were underperforming. And companies have bought, you know, a lot of XPs, and then having to have them returned and replaced. So, but from an outside looking in, it sounds like it's a good deal. Yes, they've got a history of making some purchases, and you know, we know what happened, like, you know, nearly 12 months ago with NYDIG and the debt on that side. But generally, they get most things right. Going on to the AI and HPC, I was very skeptical of miners diversifying into this space for a number of reasons. One, because AI and HPC generally use a more higher quality data center than Bitcoin miners are put into. So if you look at, you know, say, for instance, Hut 8 or Marathon, where they've used containers for putting miners in at some of their locations. But then you look at what Iris Energy uses their facilities, they're quite high spec for a Bitcoin miner. So they're very much, you know, they have great cooling systems, great airflow. They look like gold standard mining facilities. When you look at them, look at the pictures and compare them to other miners. So maybe they've done some research and thought, actually, there's not as much to do to get from where they need to be to get to a facility that can accommodate these GPUs and servers required for that AI facility. And then that got me inquisitive. And then Hive, I think, released today this last week, that they are now seeing performance of these AI chips with some of the servers that they already set up really improving from where they were from when they were testing them a few months ago. They're getting significant more percentages. And they're already saying now that the revenues achieved per megawatt are 15 times that of Bitcoin mining. So, you know, I might have gone from like initial skepticism to sort of like opportunist in it might be opportune for these three big miners to, you know, look at it. I mean, let's be honest, Hut 8 and Hive Digital were sort of forced into that. You know, they had all these GPUs. They couldn't do anything else with them, and they were mining Bitcoin, but you're mining fractions. You know, I mean, Hive's revenue from mining Ethereum the month before the merge was $5.5 million per month in Ethereum mining at 95% margins. You know, they had the best numbers for 2021 and 2022. you know, better numbers than Marathon, Riot, all the bigger miners, because they were doing significant revenues with Ethereum. But all of a sudden that revenue stopped, and then they've had to sort of like relook at where they are and how they're going to move forward. And, you know, they'll say, we had this in mind for 2 or 3 years ago, and, you know, now we'll start to see. But we'll start to see from the numbers. I mean, if we look at the last quarter, I think it was $250,000 in the quarter earned from AI. They're saying that can get to 50 million in the next sort of 12 to 18 months. So, you know, they're putting it out there. They're putting in the updates. The numbers will show where they're going. This could be really, this could be a really good move for those three companies in complementing the Bitcoin mining revenues, because AI and HPC is not linked to Bitcoin. So this is going to be good revenues, irrespective of what the Bitcoin price is. So I think I need to learn more about, you know, how a Bitcoin miner can move into this space, and will other big miners? I'm hearing other miners are also looking at it as well now. So that 10 million deal for Iris Energy did make me think twice. You know, Hut 8 and Hive already had the GPUs. It was a case of what we're going to do with them. But for another miner to go out there and spend a significant amount when they're building a Childress site that's capable of getting their hash rate to 30 exahash in the future, so effectively future-proofing their strategy, why would they spend 10 million on AI when they could spend 10 million on more miners to fit out the site? So, you know, I have to look at Dan and Will Roberts, who co-founded and are co-CEOs of Iris Energy. They're quite astute in the investment markets. They've got a lot of experience, and I don't think they would have got into this without doing a little bit of due diligence.
Yeah,
they certainly, you know, use their knowledge and experience to get through the default notice on the NYDIG loan, and came out of that one probably, you know, better than most expected from an outsider's point of view. But they obviously were fully aware of what was, you know, what could happen, and were basically securing their company from paying that debt should the loan not be repaid. So you know, I think there's more to it, and I think you know, we'll see other miners maybe look at moving into this space, diversifying into this space as another opportunity.
Gotcha. Thanks for that info. It's certainly something that a lot of miners are going to have to learn about, I think, in the near future, whether they'll want to or not. Let's finish up talking about debt. I saw on Bitfarms update that they are now down to $10 million in debt. And correct me if I'm wrong there, but that's quite a turnaround from the amount of debt that they had. Of course, this comes after a lot of Bitcoin miners were put into a bad situation last year when Bitcoin price crashed. Equity market was just not something you could mine anymore. And the cost of debt was increasing at the fastest in the modern US history. The price of interest rates went up so quickly. So curious if there's any updates on the debt front from you've seen from over the last summer and months.
No, you're right to mention Bitfarms. I mean, just over 12 months ago, it was 160 million of debt, and they've got rid of 150 million by doing a multiple things. They sold machines, you know, they've been making early repayments, and they've done everything right. I mean, obviously, the one thing that affects the fact they've had to do this is the fact the growth of Bitfarms has not gone as quickly as was expected 18 months ago. So, you know, back in sort of like mid 2022, they were looking at 6 exahash by the end of 2022. In fact, they're looking at 8 exahash, which got amended in the middle of the year to 6 exahash. And it's only now in sort of September 2023 that they've gotten past 6 exahash. So they're sort of like 9-10 months behind on an original trajectory that was 2 exahash lower than the previous trajectory. So, you know, it has caused the growth but they expect to get that 9.9 million of debt remaining paid off before the halving, which will put them in a really good position. And if you ignore the energy credits, Bitfarms performed the best in every category this month. You know, so solid miner, they've performed the best pretty much every month since the start of the year. So they just seem to have this, you know, formula that gets the best out of the machines energized. And they've got they're occupying, you know, 9 sites at the moment in 4 different countries. So that's not an easy logistical offering, but, you know, we've seen them grow in Argentina, and they've reached the capacity there as they expected to do, and the same is happening in Paraguay. And they've got sites in the US and a lot of sites in Canada. But they've turned around a position that was looking like it could be the end of the company at one point. With regards to debt in so there's been no miners taking on debt in recent quarters, mainly because of the fact that it was so bad in 2022. I mean, we saw Course Scientific going to Chapter 11. We saw Argo Blockchain had one foot in Chapter 11, according to their communication that was quickly withdrawn. And we saw other miners with significant debt also getting closer to going into Chapter 11 as well. So from the miners I cover now, many of the miners are reducing, have been reducing the debt, and quite a few of the miners have got zero debt. So you look at the likes of Bit Digital, zero debt. Iris Energy now have zero debt. You look at Riot Platforms, have got no debt. They have some liabilities, very small amount of liabilities. I think some leases and like that. But we're talking, for the size of their company, less than 1% or something like that. So, debt there. In terms of company with debt, we have Marathon Digital, who did have $747 million of debt until some of the notes were repaid recently. So that happened, I think, in August or September. More than half the notes were repaid. We're not quite sure as who instigated that, whether it was the actual note holders or whether it was Marathon themselves. But that debt was only literally a 1% charge. So that's about the cheapest debt you can actually have on the market. TerraWulf have about $100 million of debt, and they have a plan in place of how that's going to be paid down and how they're going to get through the halving. So they have a number of options available to them. I would have expected maybe to use some of the ATM to pay some of the debt down when them share prices for TerraWulf had reached $4 a share in July, and now the stock price is trading just over $1. So that share price has come down over 70% in the last 12 weeks. And I even sent a note to the company to say, I'd be looking at using the ATM to reduce some of that debt. So it was a little throwaway. And, it'd be interesting to see if they actually did. But they've got 100 million. Argo Blockchain still have a significant amount of debt. But what's notable is they've got new management in, and they're really looking at how they can cut costs. And so the team have been working on that. They've been getting benefit from the energy credits, although we haven't seen at the moment. We will see when the accounts, but there is a deal with Galaxy on how the energy credits are split between both organizations. And so that will give them some support, but they still have to pay, the debt that they have on the balance sheet at the moment, and it's quite significant for what revenues they're bringing in.
Okay, we will wrap up there. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Talk with you soon.